Welcome back. I'm Kristen Balls, and you're listening to Where I Left Off, a bookish podcast. And today, I'm joined by the author of Business or Pleasure, The X-Talk, Today, Tonight, Tomorrow, and so many more, Rachel Lynn Solomon. And today, we're talking about her upcoming young adult release, Past, Present, and Future. Thank you so much for joining me today, Rachel.
Thank you for having me, Kristen. I'm really happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you. I've been loving your books, but I always ask every author that comes on, what are you currently reading right now?
Yeah, so I am currently reading the audiobook or listening to the audiobook of the latest Finley Donovan book. I am just obsessed. They are these comedic murder mysteries that really just have you kind of at the edge of your seat, laughing, but also stressed. And there's a bit of romance as well. And they're just such a blast, especially on audio.
Yeah. My friend Paige actually went to an event with the author. And so she's been telling me about them. So they're definitely very high on my TBR. And I kind of like how they don't fit like one specific genre. And like you said, they have a little bit of everything.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's a really fun genre mashup.
So what is something that you're passionate about that might surprise your readers?
So I don't know if maybe passion is the best word, but something that I've gotten into lately is birds. And I think part of the reason is I live in Amsterdam and, you know, I walk or take public transit everywhere. I would be biking if I were not afraid of for my life, because everyone is just far more confident than I am. But there are just so many different birds here, you know, just different from the ones that I grew up with in Seattle. And I really love seeing a bird in the wild that I haven't seen before and then like looking it up and finding out what it is. There are gray herons, which I had never seen before. And they're just incredible because they're huge and they're so still that sometimes if you're just walking by, you don't even notice them or you think it's a statue because they just don't move for minutes on end. And I especially love this time of year in the spring because you see all of the ducks paired up. Sometimes you get to see their nests. And I think just because Amsterdam is a city that, I mean, the water is so central to how the city runs that you are so much closer to the avian wildlife. So I've been joking to my husband and my friends, like, be careful, I'm going to get into birding. But I think it's a legitimate risk. And I'm already there.
And you can put like some bird references or even a main character that has that as their hobby in your next book. You never know where it could show up.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they're just so cool. They're so interesting.
I love that. Speaking of writing a little bit more, is there any tropes that you haven't written yet that you think you would want to add into future novels?
I have never written best friends to lovers. And
oh, that's my favorite.
Yeah, it's such a great one when it's done well. I mean, like, people we meet on vacation is just God tier when it comes to that. Because I honestly didn't even think I liked the trope that much until I read that book. And it's just so well done. So I actually have a YA in progress. I mean, I have a few chapters written, but I'm not going to be able to work on it until later this year. That is best friends to lovers. But I think YA, like, I would love to do it in adult as well, because I think it just hits differently. I mean, it can be great in both age categories, but I would like to do, there's a difference between being lifelong friends when you're 17 versus lifelong friends when you're 30.
True. Oh my gosh, that'll be so cool. So is your actual work in progress? Okay, so are you working kind of on two things at once, like a little bit with the YA that you have to shelf and then another book? Or what's kind of your focus right now?
I can usually only focus on one thing at a time. And it's usually just whatever the most pressing deadline is. So at the moment, I'm working on my next adult romance, which is actually set in Amsterdam. And that one has been, it's been a lot of fun. It's been a challenge because I've never written something that wasn't set in Seattle, where all my other books are set. And even though I've lived here for 3 years, it's just, you know, I want to do the city justice and I want to make sure I'm portraying it in both a positive light while also showing all the weird and quirky things that make it, you know, such a fascinating and just bizarre sometimes place to live. So I think I've been putting a lot of pressure on myself, but I always reach a point at every revision where I'm like, I actually think this could be an okay book. And I got to that point yesterday. So
oh, good.
I'm currently feeling good. And then my YA project is, so that adult book is scheduled for next year. And then I have a YA project that hasn't been announced yet. That's the Best Friends to Lovers one. And that will be coming out in 2026. And I have a few chapters, but I'll start really working on it later this year.
Nice. I was going to say on your Amsterdam book, the contemporary rom-com, I think that one thing that you do particularly well is always just kind of creating like a visceral reaction. I've never actually been to Seattle, but reading your books, I feel like I'm there. So I have no doubt that this new one will be perfect set in Amsterdam.
I hope so. Thank you.
Yeah. So talking a little bit more about your upcoming novel, Past, Present, and Future. So this is the second novel. The first is Today, Tonight, and Tomorrow. And then this is a second in the duology. So what inspired you to kind of come back to and continue a Rowan and Neil story?
The short answer is the readers. So this book came out in 2020. I drafted it in 2017. So it's been a long time since I was, you know, in that the headspace of that first book. And it was released, I should specify, it was released in July 2020. And leading up to the book, when the world shut down, I just assumed it was doomed. It was my favorite thing I'd ever written. And I was like, well, you know, it'll be out there and we'll see what happens. But my hopes and expectations were my hopes were somewhere in the middle, I guess. Expectations were on the floor. And I think what happened was people were really looking for escapist books. You know, romantic comedies were providing that for so many readers. And even though this book portrayed a version of the world that was not possible to access at the time, because it's about two seniors on the last day of high school that play this citywide scavenger hunt / assassin game. And they are longtime academic rivals. They end up teaming up and, of course, realizing that they've been in love with each other this whole time. I heard from a lot of teens who were kind of robbed of that end of high school experience. And it was just really meaningful to hear that they were able to escape and find some joy in that book. And then I just continue to be super lucky. I mean, it's very hard to explain. I think publishers are always trying to figure out why a book resonates with readers more than another. But Today, Tonight, Tomorrow is the book that I heard the most from readers about. And I also, the one thing I kept hearing was what happens to them afterward. Because I purposefully didn't write an epilogue. It ends, it takes place in 24 hours, and we really don't see what happens after that day. And in my head, I always just assumed that they would be together forever, because as a romance writer, kind of have to believe in that.
Yeah.
So when people ask me, I would just kind of jokingly say like, yeah, you know, they never break up and they die together in their sleep in their 90s holding each other. but the more people asked, the more I just started thinking about it. And I was going through, you know, some upheaval in terms of, you know, moving and completely uprooting my life from Seattle to Amsterdam. That obviously caused a very exciting thing that I'm, you know, super, super grateful for, but not without challenges. And I had just been so happy when I was drafting Today, Tonight, Tomorrow. And I wanted to try to recapture that, but I also didn't want the sequel to feel like a cheap money grab. I think that's just a very easy way that people brush off sequels that they don't like. And I was very scared of that. So I didn't want to write it until I felt like I had a solid idea. And I knew that if I wrote it, that it would take place in college and that it would follow them on this long distance relationship. But I didn't really know what they would specifically be doing in the book. And it actually wasn't until the title came to me that I really felt like I had to do it. Because the title is just kind of a perfect parallel of the first one. And I think I emailed my team about the possibility of writing this book. I want to say it was in 2022, maybe like end of 2022. And then it was originally going to come out last year, but that didn't happen because of, you know, other book deadlines. And I just, again, like really wanted to do it justice.
Yeah.
I tend to put a lot of pressure on myself. This is just a theme with me. But I didn't want to announce the book until I was completely done with it, because I wanted to make sure, even though the initial idea was sparked by people asking what happened to Rowan and Neil after the last chapter, I wanted to write it for myself first without any other voices in the room, and feel like if I could get it right for myself, then hopefully the readers would see that I'd, you know, done the best that I could with these characters and just given them all the care that they deserved.
I agree. And I mean, at first, whenever I saw there was a sequel, I was like, how are you going to take that subplot of the how? Like, that was what made it so special, was having the how and the competition and the kind of enemies to lovers. And then as I was reading it, like from the first page, I just realized, okay, this is really good. And I like how you took the long distance relationship and you still included a lot of the struggles to make it more realistic, but it never felt forced at any point. And you still added some other fun little twist that I don't want to ruin for readers, that really keep the plot moving along.
Yeah,
I was going to ask you, whenever you start really second guessing yourself, is there any kind of tactic that you use to kind of keep going? Is it just writing it for yourself first and then just kind of showing it to friends and getting feedback and adjusting? Or do you have any like specific tactics for kind of inspiring writers?
Whining to my friends tends to work really well. They're really good at, you know, positive affirmations. Sometimes you just need some cheerleading. No, but I feel like, you know, critique partners and like my author friends really are the best when they're helping with brainstorming. That is just invaluable, I think. And then also, you know, my editor and my agent will help with that as well. But sometimes you're just so close to a project and you can't see the very obvious way forward until someone points it out. And this happened with Past, Present, Future, actually. Someone suggested something that completely changed the book. And then a different friend suggested something with my Amsterdam book. And it's something that now I'm like, how did I not see that? But you're just too close to it. And you need that outside perspective sometimes. So yes, definitely talking it out with other people helps. Kind of just taking a break and like, you know, getting some fresh air, exercise, so I'm not just locked in my little room all day.
Yep.
And also sometimes if I'm really struggling with something, obviously it's a sign that it's not working, but it's usually a sign of something deeper that's wrong. Like if I'm dreading writing a certain chapter, then why is the reader going to enjoy reading it if I didn't like writing it? So usually I need to go back to the drawing board and figure out, okay, why am I not excited about this chapter and what can I do differently?
Do you tend to like really plot out your novels, or are you a little bit more of a pantser?
No, I do really heavily outline. My outlines are probably, I would say like 7,000 to 10,000 words or so, because they often have like chunks of dialogue that just come to me as I'm working on them. But I mean, with this book I'm working on now, like I've re-outlined it 4 times in the process of between drafting and now revising, because I just couldn't figure out like what the plot was, where the tension was. I often start with an outline. Almost always by the midpoint, things have changed and I need to go back and re-outline, because it just kind of, not, I don't want to say it goes off the rails, it just goes in a direction that I hadn't planned. And I actually think that's really fun, because I know that some pantsers don't outline because they want to be surprised. And even though I do really heavily outline, I have never written a book that hasn't gone in a direction that I didn't expect. And that's really exciting.
That's smart. And I feel like you could probably say that for so many things in life. As soon as you have a plan, something's definitely not going to, you know, always go according to that plan. But of course, it helps to have, you know, a little bit of an outline for sure. Talking a little bit more about the book. So what influenced your decision to add some of the more mature themes to this novel versus the first one in the duology?
A few things. I mean, they are like 19 in the book, so it is a bit more mature. They're in college. They have much more freedom, much more independence. They're not constantly reporting to their parents. And I also think college is a time where you are figuring out a lot of stuff about yourself for the first time, as a result of that freedom, and not, you know, the leash has kind of been snipped, and you, yeah, like you have to figure out how to do your laundry and how to like feed yourself every day. If those weren't things that you were used to doing, in high school. And I think it's also a time where people find, you know, they're changing atmospheres and changing friend groups, and just if every, you know, it's such a period of vast change that mental health can change a lot as a result. And then with regard to, because this book is definitely, I know it has more sexual content than Today, Tonight, Tomorrow. But I guess that is also because they are kind of on their own. But also, I think there's something really valid as, like, validating as a teenager, as someone who is, like, late in high school or in college, like, reading this book and seeing two people who are in a relationship work through, you know, some communication difficulties around intimacy. I don't think that anything in the book is not suitable for a YA audience. Or, you know, I don't think my YA publisher would have published it.
True.
But I do really stand by it. And I think that the conversations that they have as two people who are in a relationship are not ones that we get to see a lot of in YA, where everything just ends with them, like, getting together. And there isn't really that struggle around that kind of intimacy. And I think those conversations can be so important to see on the page to help, whether it's like helping someone see, have a model for how to maybe navigate that, or like whatever age you are, I think they can feel very empowering. I mean, that was my whole drive behind Business or Pleasure.
Definitely. I was going to say, same thing in Business or Pleasure, that not everything goes perfectly the first time. And there are a lot of things that they both have to talk to and conversations that they have to have. And it doesn't mean that just because it didn't go perfectly the first time that it can't get there with a little bit of work and mm-hmm. communication, for sure. Well, good to know. And if you could compete, do you think that you would be able to win the Howl, the scavenger hunt?
Absolutely not. No, I mean, my, like, you know, skills in games kind of start and end with anything word-based. So, you know, Scrabble is, yep. I can win Scrabble, but not much else. I'm not super coordinated. And I also don't think I don't have the, like, competitive nature, I think, to go running around the city to figure out the scavenger hunt clues. So yeah, I think I'd be quite bad at it.
Whenever you were making the scavenger hunt clues, did you just kind of go off of memory because you've lived in Seattle, or did you kind of have to do some research and walk around and figure out how you were going to structure them?
Yeah, I did a lot of research, a lot of exploring. There were so many things in my early drafts that didn't make it into the final book. I had, like, maps. I mean, I had, you know, it's basically that meme with, like, the, you know, murder map, except it was just
yep.
weird things in Seattle. And it was actually kind of a bummer because there were some things in my earlier drafts and actually some things that are in the final that are no longer there. So it's sort of this weird time capsule of a Seattle that doesn't quite exist anymore, at least the way that I wrote it. So it's very interesting too, now that I don't live there, because I spent the first 30 years of my life in Seattle, going back and seeing it change. So I wrote this book as a love letter to Seattle, and I do, like, feel really attached to that version of it.
I agree. It's really interesting to be able to, you know, just see all the different landmarks and places that you include in both novels, and especially in this one as they go off to New York and Boston, and you get to talk about both of those places and kind of their new environments. But I was going to say that one thing I really enjoyed about the book was both Neil and Rowan's roommate situations, and that not to ruin anything in any way, but when they get there, the roommates maybe aren't the personalities that they were expecting. Did you have a similar roommate experience?
I actually did. And I remember writing this, or like drafting this, and thinking I wanted, specifically Neil, I wanted to give him just a roommate that would be the complete opposite of him. And it's like he's just this I mean, yeah, he's kind of like a himbo, I guess. But he is, he's very much a golden retriever. He's one of my favorite characters for sure. But yeah, my freshman year of college, I had a roommate who was, she was on the rugby team, and she was just very, like, I am 4'10", and she was, you know, this, like, very tough, like, rugby player. And, you know, we were always very pleasant with each other, but just ran in very different circles. And, like, I went to one of her rugby matches, and it was so scary. but then there was one time where I had, like, a bad breakup freshman year, and, you know, I was just, like, crying, and she was like very sweet, like, you know, kind of like patting my back and like, is there anything you need? And just, I think that those moments between people who just have this really just only connected by the algorithm of roommates, roommate selection, like that proximity can inspire some great kinds of closeness.
Yeah. I agree. I had a very interesting roommate experience myself. I think everyone can definitely relate to that, and so many things in this novel. And if it were just a random Saturday in the spring, what do you think that Neil and Rowan would be doing right now?
I think, well, if it's a Saturday, then they're definitely visiting each other at one of their schools and probably just exploring the city. I feel like they just love to go out and see new things. And, you know, there is a version of Howl in the book that they kind of create for each other. So I think they would be doing probably something similar in one of their cities.
I agree. And is there anything that you would like readers to know more about the book going in?
That's a great question. I think just that it's a little more serious than Today, Tonight, Tomorrow. But there is absolutely still a happy ending. The epilogue is one of my favorite things that I've ever written. And I really, like, I'm so grateful for the readers that have stuck with these characters and the readers who are just picking up the book and learning about them now, because they are 100% of the reason that I was able to do this. And yeah, I really hope they enjoy the next chapter for them.
And if they pre-order it through the link on your Instagram, then you will also personalize it with some Seattle doodles, correct?
Yeah. So they get there are a few options for just some little fun things. They can pre-order through Third Place Books in Seattle for signed copies that will also come with character art that I'll be revealing soon. And there's also a Barnes & Noble exclusive edition, which is not signed, but it does come with sprayed edges that they're blue and they have a little space needle on them. It's super cute. And there is a bonus second epilogue that I think will also be very satisfying. So kind of a pick whichever one is most appealing.
I don't know. Now I really want to read the second epilogue. So that's probably going to win it out for me. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today, Rachel. And that's it. Thanks for listening to Where I Left Off, a bookish podcast. You can sign up for Rachel's newsletter and purchase her novels through the links in the show notes. Tune in next time.
Bye.